Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I talked to James Yorkston, and it's wonderful. You are going to hear one of the most delightful voices you've probably ever heard on this podcast, and I literally didn't want the conversation to end. His voice coming through the headphones when I was recording it was so good, and it talks with such passion about the records that he chooses, and I can't wait for you to hear it. Before we start that conversation, just a few thank yous. So a thank you to 76 for producing this podcast. Thank you to Squibbish Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. And I should say that if this is your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track, and when you get to the end of this episode, why not have a look in the archives? Because there's over 200 episodes with some super ace chats with some, you know, really amazing creatives. You know, you can hear me talking to acts as diverse as, gosh, from Chic to James Lavelle to Maxine Peake to James Acaster, you know, through to Public Enemy, Melanie C. It goes all over the place, and there's a running theme that they're all interesting, passionate creatives, and so when you get to the end of this chat, go and have a little look about in the archives and see what chats tickle your fancy and give them a little listen. If you'd like to support the podcast, I have an accompanying Patreon account, and over there I put up 4 radio shows each week, video episodes, special guest episodes, and so you get a lot of stuff over there, and by signing up over there, from as little as about 80p a week, it really helps support this podcast, because it's a labour of love. It's a wonderful labour of love, I should stress that. You know, I'd do it for free anyway because it's ace. But yeah, any kind of help you can give over on there is truly, truly appreciated. I know why you're here, and you're here for this. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track Podcast with James Yorkston.
It's Off the Beaten Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. Me, Stu Whiffin.
Right, we are recording. Hello, James.
Hello, Stu. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. We've been nattering sort of for 5 minutes before we've let the rest of the world in on this chat. But we haven't had the obvious chat, which we're going to get out of the way before we start talking about records. And that question is, I'm interested to know how you found 2020, James, as both a human and as a creative.
I'm afraid to, well, I'm not afraid to say, but I know this may not sound so good for some of your listeners, but I've absolutely loved it. I've been on the road for the last 20 years, not nonstop, of course, but it's pretty much been my way of making a living, amongst other things. And I've put out an album once every year, once every 2 years, put out books, all this sort of stuff. So we had to cancel the tour halfway through. So after we cancelled the final 10 shows of a tour, and I haven't missed it at all. I've loved being back home. I've loved being with the family. I've loved being able to walk down to my studio and just have days and days and days of time just to create more music. And we live a stone's throw from the beach, and it's the best kind of beach because it's not full of sand, it's full of rocks and rock pools, and we get crabs and seagulls and cormorants and heron, and it's an amazing place to live, and I'm thoroughly enjoyed being back here with my family and just going for long, long walks.
Perfect.
But you know, and then I suppose the bad side of that is I do have to remind my parents not to go to the supermarket. You know, sure, I do have to say, look, you can't invite people into your house at the moment. So, you know, there's obviously the same worries that everyone else has, but creatively I've loved having the time off.
That you know, do you know what though, James, that's not necessarily a rare answer. You know, I recall quite a lot of these podcasts each week, and most creative people have kind of echoed what you've said, just being able to kind of not be on the road and be able to kind of enjoy, you know, that time with both family and you know, being able to kind of work from a home studio and just, you know, there be no time constraints as such.
Yeah, well, I don't blame them. It's enlightening. You know, I was just at a really good place with my live work, where I was just feeling very comfortable and confident on stage, and the audience were reacting well, as well as my solo stuff. I have a trio called Yorkston Thong Khan, and we had just done one of the best shows of our lives at Celtic Connections, and then we'd come down and done all these. I was absolutely loving it, and I was livid that it had to stop. I mean, it cost us a lot of money having to cancel the tour. But being home is just a man. I tell you, I don't want to go to another airport. it takes me 90 minutes. It's a 90-minute taxi journey to the airport, and then you fly to some festival somewhere, and I'm not missing it. I hate to say it, but I'm not missing it. So when it comes back, when I have to work again, when I have to go on the road, I'm sincerely hoping that something kicks in and I rediscover the love. Because I was in a very good place before the lockdown. So I'm hoping that that very good place will kind of carry on.
Okay. Track one. What's the song with the greatest ever intro, James?
Well, obviously, this is a nonsense question. Because, I mean, it's not as though there's one song with the greatest ever intro, is there? So I just thought what was good for me, and there's a track by Faust, the German band Faust, called Knockin' Tans. And Faust are a band that I got told about when I was in my early 20s. By one of the guys in Avalanche Records in Edinburgh. And this was like 25 years ago. So before the internet, before anyone knew anything about krautrock or any of that stuff. And then those guys in the record shops, they were the guys who, they were like the Google, you know, because they knew all the stuff. So
pure high fidelity type thing.
Yeah, well, kind of, except it was a much, much smaller shop. The shop was about the size of a tiny wee sandwich shop.
Sure.
But I've come from a very small village, and I was living in Edinburgh, and these people they just had so much more information. So somebody turned me on to Faust after I told them that I liked the band Can. And this one piece of music, Knockin' Tans, is probably my favorite ever piece of music. But the intro, which probably lasts for the whole 10 minutes, to be honest, because it doesn't really, it's just an extraordinarily haunting piece of music, and then what it develops into is something that really doesn't sound like anything else. An extraordinary band, and Knockin' Tans by Faust.
I remember I had a friend who was a few years older than me that was kind of that aficionado that had all the records that you needed to know about, and he'd kind of, he'd let you into sort of like, every time you go around, he maybe sort of like give you a peek into another one of them. And I was sort of like flick through his vinyl collection, and there was just this really stark picture of this live bootleg of this band, and they were just playing, making noise with angle grinders.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
He's like, that's Faust. And I was
that's Faust.
I need to hear this, you know.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's funny because now Cannes are really, they're accepted and they're almost mainstream. You know, everyone knows vitamin C, you know. But at the time, I got into them because I was down in West Cork in a place called Baltimore, tiny fishing village called Baltimore. And the guy behind the bar was playing the End of the World soundtrack. And it had that Cannes song in it called Last Night's Sleep. So I asked him what it was, and he said, oh, it's the End of the World soundtrack. So I went and bought it when I got home, and that led me into Cannes, into Faust, and then all around that stuff. But Faust, although I love Cannes, and I still do, Faust, they're kind of, I kind of almost prefer them, because I prefer the energy and the kind of death rattle that a lot of their music has. And this track, Knockin' Tans, we actually named a song from one of our Jochsen Thorn Kern albums, Knockin' Tans, which means bone dance in German. We named one of our songs after it. And then just before lockdown, I suppose last year, I got the weirdest of phone calls, which was, would I like to come and support Faust in Edinburgh? So I was like, yeah, sure, man, why not? So I drove through. Just for my acoustic guitar. And I was terrified because, you know, you go and see Faust, you don't want to see some guy singing acoustic guitar, you know. But the audience were amazing. They were completely silent during my set, and they responded when I was joking and laughing with them. And that show was great. And then I went on stage with Faust. And
wow.
I did. Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous. So I was reciting... I can't remember what it was. You know how they have a lot of tracks where there's people kind of chatting away in German in the background? Well, it was one of those, except I was reciting a traditional song, but I can't remember which one it was. And then there was another one where I was just kind of playing the acoustic guitar. So it was an experience, a loud experience.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, for track two, I'm going to ask you the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please, James.
Well, again, this is there's all sorts of things I could have said here. It was probably in real life something I heard in church, because my parents were very avid churchgoers. So it probably would have been some kind of happy clappy song, you know, God's Spirit is in my heart or something like that, or Go the Mass Has Ended, you know, one of these things. Go the Mass Has Ended would be a great one to have chosen, actually, because we always felt really happy when the Mass had ended. So when they're singing Go the Mass Has Ended, it's like, yay, we can get out of here. The one I chose, it was, I can't even remember what it was. What was it I said to you? It could have been one of two.
It was a classical piece, I believe.
All right, it could have been one or two. It could have been, basically, we had a lesson at school where we had a classical violinist come in, and she played us some music, and there was the one which I said to you was Dance Macabre, which was composed, I think, by Camille Saint-Saëns. I'm not sure, though, because I'm not very good with that stuff. And that was the first time that we'd been sat down and encouraged to listen to music and kind of think about the different parts of it, think about what's going on in the background, think about the story it's telling. I guess I was 9 or 10. So up until then, you just think classical music is the dross that your father puts on in the car, you know. But there was, I remember tapping my feet to it and being frowned by the rest of the class because I was seeing to be enjoying this music, this classical music, whereas they were into their elder brother's music. So they were into the jam and things like this. This was like in 1979, you know. So that was probably the first piece that I kind of realized one could get into. One could actually get inside the music, if you see what I mean. But aside from that, I mean, it could have been anything. You know what I mean? Happy Birthday brings emotions, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Hopefully happy emotions.
depends how old you are. I find it's less of a joyful experience every year. So where was home then?
King's Barnes in the East Nick of Fife. So King's Barnes is a small agricultural village. Actually, it's quite big now. There's about 300 people. But when I was there, it was less than half the size. And there was maybe 3 farms. And I was there with my family. My grandmother was further north. In St. Andrews, you would have heard of St. Andrews, I'm sure. And then I moved to Edinburgh for 15 years, and then I came back. So I live a wee bit further down the coast now. I live in a place called Selladyke, which is a small fishing village. But actually, compared to King's Barnes, it's massive. There's about... Selladyke's attached to Anstruther, they're like Brighton and Hove. And there's about 4,000 people between the two. So it's actually quite a big place, you know. We've got a supermarket.
Well, you touched on school there, and so for track three, I'm going to ask you, James, the song that reminds you of your time at school.
Well, again, school, you're going from primary one to sixth year, so that's a long, long time.
I'll let you have two. You can have a primary and a secondary.
All right, okay. Well, I haven't thought of a primary, but the secondary, the one which I wrote down to you, was Never Understand by the Jesus and Mary Chain. Actually, I'll go for the first one first. Since you've just told me that, I'll say Stand and Deliver by Adam and the Ants.
Interesting.
He came on the radio or on the TV, and I was best friends with a guy called Steve Mason. Do you know Steve? He's now...
From the Beer Band.
Yeah. Steve and I were altar boys together, and we went to the same primary school and then the same secondary school and all that. So we really got into Adam and the Ants. And so I'd say... They were the ones from, though he got pretty bad pretty quickly, I have to say. So,
yeah, but there was a point where he was the coolest guy on the planet, right?
Yeah, well, maybe he was where you were, but up in Fife, he was, yeah, no, there was a point. It just maybe wasn't quite as big a point. Yeah. It lasted for about maybe 1.5 albums.
completely agree there. But there was a point where, as a, you know, I think we're very similar in age, and, you know, seeing Adam Ant on Top of the Pops was quite something, you know. I'm not going to lie and say I didn't ask my mum if she'd paint a white stripe across my nose. You know, that was wonderful. Okay, so, I mean, how did you find school?
Well, I went to a Catholic school. So we were taught by nuns for the first 7 years, and I didn't enjoy that at all. And I'd highly recommend if anyone's thinking about sending their children to a Catholic school, not to. I'd say the same about any religion, really. I'm not a fan of religion at all. So the primary school was out of the way, and then we moved into the much bigger secondary school. And that was a bit weird because we were in the classes with the Protestants, and we'd been taught that we were going to heaven as Catholics, but no one else was. So all of a sudden you're sharing a classroom with all these poor souls who are damned to hell, you know. But you know, once I go over,
I mean,
that,
if school's not hard enough anyway, fucking hell.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty weird, but maybe it was my own fault for believing it. But then when I said the Never Understand Jesus and Mary Chain album, I fell in with a group of people who were really into their music. And this was a big thing for me. And we used to swap albums back and forth. So there'd be stuff like Tommy by The Wedding Present, that Killing Joke one that came out around that time with, I can't remember the name of it. And of course, Never Understand was one of the big ones. Somebody would buy a record and you'd tape it and then you'd pass it around your pals, you know. And that one was an extraordinary thing.
How old were you then, James?
I'm going to say second year at school. So what's that, 12?
That's some intense music. Mary Chain and Wedding Present and Killing Joke at 12. That's
But we loved it.
Sonically, that's some glorious racket there, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, but we absolutely loved it. You know, I've got pals who are very much into pop music, and that's, bless them. You know, I love Erasure, I love I can't think of anyone else poppy. But
that's a good one to choose, though.
But I just, you know, I really like Pet Shop Boys, I really like Soft Cell. When The Cure used to come on the TV, I thought they were great as well. Adam and the Ants, obviously, Eurythmics. There's all this sort of stuff that when it came out I was drawn towards. But then most of the chart stuff, the chart poppy stuff, I absolutely hated. So people like Elton John and David Bowie and all, sure, this kind of stuff, get it away from me. But the stuff that was kind of coming in through John Peel, I somehow really connected to it. And yeah, Never Understand, that whole album is extraordinary. So Psycho Candy.
Yeah.
That was, so I guess school kind of reminds me of that, because it's the period where I was sharing music with my pals and discovering new things.
Was you playing music?
Was I playing music?
Yeah.
Do you know a guy called, you might know a guy called Vic Galloway?
Yep.
Vic Galloway, for some of your listeners who don't know him, he's now a DJ on BBC Radio Scotland, and he also is on BBC Radio 6, and he used to be on, you know, you get the point. Vic grew up in the same village as me, and when we were kids, he lived just over the road. When we were kids, we would write songs about the village, you know, and the cows and stuff. So we were making music pretty much from the age of 8 or 9. And when he got a punk rock retrospective, I can't remember what it was called. Maybe it was called England's Burning or England's Dreaming or something. And it had people like Peter and the Test Tube Babies and Dead Kennedys and things like that in there. And we were very much into that way before we even went to secondary school. The first gig that we went to was The Damned. And that was in, I have to get this right, it was on the Grimly Fiendish tour. So whenever that came out, 85. So that was the first gig we went to when I guess I was 14, he was 12. So, you know, we were, there wasn't a huge leap from that to the Jesus and Mary Chain. The Jesus and Mary Chain were kind of pretty guys making the same music that we'd been listening to. They weren't scary. Like the Dead Kennedys, they were scary.
Yeah.
You know, the Jesus and Mary Chain weren't scary. I mean, it was it's pop music, isn't it, really?
It's loud.
It's loud pop music, yeah.
So, you say that you was writing songs at a very young age, and at 12, 13, you're starting to kind of, you know, delve into, I guess, more interesting forms of music. Was that kind of, I mean, was you a creative kid?
When I first started making music for a living when I was 29, 30, all the PR things that went out said, from the Eastnacka Fife, a make your own entertainment type of place. So I think we kind of had to all be creative around here. But I wasn't, I don't know, I wasn't building space rockets or anything. I don't remember doing anything unusual. I remember Vic, his real name's Mike. I remember Mike Vic getting a banjo, and I remember I had a two-stringed electric guitar that my brother's friend Neville had given me. But I don't think there was anything exceptional going on. It was just we were obsessed with music. Mike Vic's father was really into early rock and roll, so we used to listen to a lot of that stuff. And I don't know, it just seemed such an easy thing to do, to put music on and dance around like a lunatic, you know?
That interest in music, was that encouraged and you know, nurtured at school?
No, no.
Not at all?
Absolutely not. And that's one of a slight bugbear of mine, because I can't read music. And in fact, I can work it out if I look at it, but I really tried to read music. I never could really do it. And it's a slight bugbear of mine that it wasn't noted that although I couldn't read the music very well, I had a huge enthusiasm for it. But, you know, I'm doing okay.
Track 4, the first song you remember buying from a record shop.
Well, this, my Auntie Faith, bless her, my Auntie Faith gave me a £5 record token or something, you know. And I went into Woolworths and I bought 20 rock and roll greatest hits. And I bought it just because of the cover. And I guess I was maybe 6 or 7. I don't know how old I was. And it had the sort of typical Las Vegas sort of lights on it. So it had like a cowboy with his hand, with his hitching a ride and all this sort of stuff. And then on the front, it had all these people who I hadn't heard of. And it was people like Roy Orbison, Bill Haley and the Comets. Who else was on it? Jerry Lee Lewis.
Eddie Cochran?
No Eddie Cochran. I don't know. I'm trying to think of who the... Anyway, it doesn't. No Eddie Cochran. It was a weird mix of kind of good people, but it didn't have people like Chuck Berry on it. You know, it didn't have anyone like that. It kind of had a few kind of country and Western guys on it as well. It was a choice of that or Bat Out of Hell by Meatloaf. And I wasn't allowed to buy Bat Out of Hell by Meatloaf because it was called Bat Out of Hell.
Right, <You know>? Sure.
So I got 20 rock and roll greatest hits. But I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And that album taught me a huge amount about music because most of it's 12 bar. And I learned that what they were doing pretty quickly is the same thing on every song. And that taught me the 1-5-6 thing or the 1-4-5 thing. It taught me the sort of the blues running orders of the chords, you know. And there's one track on that, which I noted down, called Domino by Roy Orbison. Now, Roy Orbison obviously is the king, you know. But this one song, it's very dark, you know, and it's kind of got this skiffle beat running underneath it. And it's got this incredible guitar solo on it, just like a very weird, spiky guitar solo. And it's this song, says, there's a guy downtown that you might know. He goes by the name of Domino. And it's all about this kind of crazy character. And the reason I chose that one from the album is because when I met Lawrence Bell, who's the head of Domino Records, and when he signed me to Domino 20 years ago, I was talking to him about that song. Said, oh, I like Domino. Yeah, I really like the song Domino. And he said, yeah, that's what we named after that song. So it kind of came back into some kind of full circle because I've been with them, as I said, for 20 years. So it's been a chunk of my life now. But that was an incredible record. And that's a song that was Carl Perkins was on it, Glad All Over.
Yeah.
That's my favorite song. 1:40 of just perfection.
Yeah.
And then there's some Bill Haley and the Comets live tracks. And there's a version of Lucille, you know, Lucille. Mm-hmm. And it starts out, it's extraordinary. It's at such a high tempo. But then you can kind of feel the band because they're all old, quite fat guys. And the band slows down. So halfway through, you know, they've really lost the tempo and they're really kind of struggling to get the end of this song. But still a lot of energy in it. And a really Raunchy was on it as well. Bill Justice, Raunchy, which is a lovely instrumental track. So it was a very... I still love the album. You can tell by the way I'm talking about it. I still love the album.
Just to touch on record shops a little bit, you know, moving forward from, you know, early purchases, you know, like that one, throughout your life, you know, and, you know, being an independent artist, like how important have record shops been for you?
Well, there were extraordinary places when I first moved to Edinburgh, because it would be a place you could go and spend a day walking around by yourself. And at the time, there was probably 10 or 15 really good record shops. Edinburgh is a very small city. I'm sure you're aware of that. Compared to London, it's nothing. And the centre itself is very small for a city. And then, of course, it's got lots of outskirts. But there were great places where you could just go and explore and try and find things, you know. And there were kind of parts of my life which were, like, I used to look in the experimental and the noise sections, and I'd pick up things by people like Nurse with Wound and things. And then the folk section, obviously, and then the reggae section, because one of my brothers was a big fan of Burning Spear and Lynton Kwesi Johnson. So I was introduced to that stuff in my sort of mid-teens, I think. So they were just incredible places. They're like, I don't want to say like they're like a university or anything, because of course that's nonsense, but they were a great place for discovering and finding new music, whole new things, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so much of it would be down to the cover or the recommendation of the guy behind the counter, often quite a lot. The price, you know?
Yeah, of course.
you go in there with a tenner and you buy two records for £4 each, and then you get £2. What can you get with £2? Oh, look, there's a sample of, you know, a 99p sampler. But there's always something good on the 99p sampler,
yeah.
You know? So, no, it's been great. And now my relationship with record shops is different. I tend to go in and play in the corner or something, you know, once people sign my records, which I absolutely hate. But you know, I do it. You know, well, it's a horrible thing to do, but I do it, and it's just kind of show support for the record shops. You know, basically,
you don't enjoy doing installs.
No.
What is it you don't enjoy about it?
I guess the worst thing is, you know, I remember in St Andrews there's the Waterstones, that bookshop Waterstones. And I remember walking in there once, and there was a guy who was selling books on the history of narrow gauge railways. And he was there with his kind of display, and no one was talking to him. No one was interested in him. And he was just sat there like a lunatic. No, sorry. He was sat there looking a bit lonely and a bit kind of awkward. My music is basically... it, for people who are interested in narrow gauge railways, you know, this isn't the history of the Beatles or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a pretty narrow, again, it's a small audience. So you're going to these places, you've no idea what they're like, no idea how you're going to be treated, if anyone's going to be there even. So they can be really hellish, because you're just stuck in a corner. There's a 17-year-old boy says, "Well, are you James Yorkson? You just go and play over there, mate. You just, yeah, you just start singing whenever you're ready." And you're like, what am I doing? What am I doing in my life that I'm standing in a corner singing songs to people who've come in to buy ABBA records? You
know? Oh, wonderful.
So it's, they're not always good. On the most recent, on my last tour, sorry, my last solo album was called The Route to the Harmonium, and I did a load of record store visits for those. And the Scottish ones were really good. I enjoyed them. The one in London was good. And the others, I was treated well and things, but I haven't warmed to them.
Okay.
Well, you weren't going to ask me to do one.
I just wonder what he's doing tomorrow. I've got a load of ABBA records I got to shift. For track five, I'm going to ask you the song that soundtracked your year's clubbing.
Well, again, I guess I did what you could call clubbing for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. So how are you going to put 10 years into one song? So I've chosen a reggae track by a guy called Prince Farai, and the track is Foggy Road. And the reason I chose that, we used to run a reggae club, my brother and I, called Spongy Reggae Function when we were in our early 20s. I was in my early 20s, he was in his mid-20s. And it was a lot of fun, basically. We'd charge £1 on the door and just play spectacularly heavy dub.
This is in Edinburgh, yeah.
And we'd sit up the stairs in the DJ booth and toot on a blim and just have a lot of fun. And because it was £1 to get in, so no one was ever complaining about what we played, you know. And it was a fun time. You know, my brother lives in Florida now. I never see him. And it reminds me of a very carefree time. And also, I went to a lot of the other reggae clubs. And the dance clubs, things like Pure and Sativa, I didn't go to nearly as often. And then there was like the indie clubs, you know. And they were for me for like 2 or 3 years. But then I kind of went into the sort of basically the darker stuff, you know, the less mainstream stuff. So a dub reggae track. Or mainly dub reggae track is the one for me. And Prince Farai, I loved what he was doing. You know, I absolutely loved the fact that he was just chatting out the Bible. And he was just kind of, it's a peculiar skill. It's a peculiar way to make a living, just being a guy talking on top of other people's records. Yeah. So I guess I maybe feel a slight affinity with him as well.
Wonderful. For track six, James, I'm going to ask you for a favourite song from an artist from your home county, please.
Oh, does it say county? Oh, it says county. I thought it said country.
That's fine. You won't be you're certainly not the first. You're probably about the 50th. So I need to really kind of, when I send these questions, I will highlight that point because it's happened a lot. So yeah, country's fine, mate.
We don't actually have counties in Scotland. We have regions. I put down Dick Gochan and I wrote the Bonnie Banks of 40, but I could have written any of his down. Dick, for me, I met him once. He played at my club once and he was extraordinary. Dick was one of the links between traditional folk, the leaders and the trailers, the people came after, the folk revival. And he is really part of the folk revival, but he was very intertwined, you know. And he's one of these acts whose his versions of traditional songs, like Westland Winds and this Bonnie Banks of 40, they kind of became the canon that the other traditional singers would look at. So when they went to versions of Now Westland Winds, they'd look at Gochan's version as he had done such a kind of astounding piece of work. And from a kind of guitar player's point of view, he was extraordinary as well. So that's why Dick Gochan, we ended up doing with Yorkston Thorn Khan, that's me, Yorkston, and then John Thorne on double bass, and Khan is Sahel Yusuf Khan, who's a sarangi player from New Delhi. And we kind of do this improvised mess. We did a version of Westland Winds with Sahel singing this ancient Sufi poem that anchors from like the 15th or 16th century that touched on the same themes as Robert Burns's Now Westland Winds. And we took Dick Gochan's version of Now Whistling Winds as the springboard. But because it's sung in a Sufi fashion, it very, very quickly left the springboard. And then I come in at the end and I sing just one verse of Robert Burns's Now Whistling Winds, but kind of in Dick Gochan's style and melody. So, yeah, he's been a big... He's a very important figure in the Scottish traditional music, basically. And why not mention him? If I'd read that properly and said your favorite song from an artist from your home county, I probably would have said there's a lady here called HMS Jennifer, and she doesn't really sing or play anymore. But in the early days of, I was part of a thing called the Fence Collective a long time ago. She used to turn up and sing songs. And within that collective, there was people like myself and King Creosote and Katie Tunstall and the Pictish Trail. And Jenny, we all felt, HMS Jennifer, we all felt that she had more talent than a lot of us put together. But she just never wanted... She never wanted to be a singer. You know, she never wanted to be that at all. She always wanted to stay here, stay in the village, and just work at her work. So I suppose I would mention a song of hers, and I'd probably say something like, there's a song of hers called Thar She Blows, which is a particularly lovely little song.
Perfect. For your last track, James, I'm going to ask you to tell us a song that many people might not know that you would like them to hear.
Well, again, listen to the podcast and you'll hear 50 episodes of me playing songs I think people should hear. But the one I chose for this, there was a band called The Roaches, and their first album is kind of like a cult classic. And it's got a track on it called The Hammond Song, and the one about going away to Ireland. I can't remember what the name of that track is. It's probably called Going Away to Ireland. And it's a beautiful little sort of coffee bar, folky harmony album. And then the career, I kind of lost track of their career because it was getting better produced, and it was... I was kind of losing interest in it. They did things like the Hallelujah Chorus, which I had zero interest in. And then when they came up with this album called Can We Go Home Now, and I suppose this was in about 2000, 2002, somewhere around there. Might have been slightly before then. Anyway, there's a track in it called When You're Ready. And one of the things I love about music is when you can't quite understand how a song has been written or put together, and how the songwriting process, the recording process, the arrangement, none of it is abundantly clear. Don't get me wrong, I love very simple songs as well. I love Jonathan Richman, I love Lou Reed. I love very simple songs where you can, oh, it's A, E, B. I love all that stuff. But when a song is so mysterious, like an Alice Coltrane song, that you don't really know what's going on, it really can appeal to me greatly. And this song, When You're Ready, I think it's about when the child is ready to leave home. But there's this amazing electric sort of oboe vibe going on. And the rhythm is, I don't know what the rhythm is. I couldn't count it out for you. And then the harmonies, the three ladies and the Roaches are singing three-part harmony almost the whole way throughout the song. And it's this very peculiar, it's in a minor key, but it's not just a minor key. It's got such a longing in it, such a kind of beautiful kind of grasping for something, you know. So it's one of my favorite ever pieces of music. And we began this chat, we're talking about the other one, Faust Knockintens. So The Roaches, When You're Ready. I'm very happy to recommend that as a song that some of you might not have heard.
As we get to the end of a very strange year, for good or bad, looking towards next year, 2021, what are you looking forward to personally, and what's happening professionally?
It's hard to say because I'm not really looking forward to going on the road at all. two of my best friends are John Thorne and Sahel Yusuf Khan, and we as I said earlier, we had to stop that last tour in the middle very abruptly because the government weren't saying anything about COVID. They were saying, "Oh, just carry on," and we were thinking, "No, we have to stop. You know, we have to stop." So we stopped this. We stopped this thing. I am looking forward to seeing them again. I am looking forward to seeing my family again because they're scattered all around the world. And I'm hoping that they'll start coming back to see my parents, so I'll get to see them as well. And I'm looking forward to seeing my friends on the road all over. And I'm hoping festivals go ahead. I hope the Green Man Festival goes ahead. I hope I get booked. Professionally, I've written the next JY record. I've got a new JY record come out in January. Called The Wide, Wide River. I've written the one after that, so I'm going to have to get together somehow and start recording that. I've written a load of new pieces for Yoxanthal Khan. I've done a lot of word writing as well, which we'll have to see what happens with the word writing. So it's, you know, I'm always spinning plates. Oh, I run this tour as well. I run this thing called Te Sapwe Fifa. It's a club night in Kakodi. And in this year, we were supposed to have done three tours around Scotland with it, but that all got cancelled because of COVID. So,
what is that? What tell us a little bit about the club night. What is it?
That's incredible. It's an amazing thing. There was a thing called the Fence Collective here, and they used to put on gigs in the area and little festivals, and we'd have people like John Hopkins, and I think the Unthanks came up, Fortet came up. So it's some reasonable sized names, but mostly just local bands, local acts. And when that stopped, there was a sort of kind of gap. So 20 miles away from me, there's a significantly bigger town called Kakodi, or the Langtoon, it's called. And I just started putting on club nights there. And the idea was basically I'd have three acts per night, and I'd mix music with poetry and just whoever I fancied having. So I guess some of the more memorable ones were, we had Linton Kwesi Johnson came up and did a solo set, and he was playing with Catherine Joseph, who's a Scottish musician, and a guy called Adam Ross, who's another Scottish musician. And then we had Dick Gochen, we've had Martin Carthy, we had Carl Stone come over. Carl Stone was playing at the Barbican in London. He was doing this big show in the Barbican with surround. He does kind of quite avant-garde electronic music, sample-based electronic music. He's been doing it since the early 70s. And he used to do it live with records, but now, of course, he uses laptops like everyone else. And he was playing this one big show down in London at the Barbican, and I managed to persuade him to come up and play in Kakodi. And we got this surround sound speaker system. And he was extraordinary. I mean, it was just, what a noise, you know. And because the club night has a lot of varied different acts. You know, we have pop acts. So we have King Crizzo's played, Steve Mason's played. But Carl Stone came. And it was so loud and so extraordinary. It was like being, one of the things was like being stuck inside. Do you remember the band, the Bundu Boys?
Mm-hmm.
It was like being stuck inside one of their guitars on a loop. it was just this extraordinary thing going round and round the room. And two old grannies left. And I was sitting at the back and welcomed people in and stuff and sell the merchandise for the acts, you know. And they came over and they said to me, "I'm sorry, James, I don't like this." And they walked out. But it's amazing. And I get to ask all sorts of people to come and play. And because it's supported by Creative Scotland, it means that I have a little bit more money to offer than otherwise I'd be able to. So, I mean, I still have to fill the room. You know, I still have to... For me to get any money, I have to fill the room. But there's enough money for for the acts that isn't a risk, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
So that we'll be doing that again next year. And I'm looking forward to that, I suppose. I mean, you know, I'm talking about it and I'm lighting up and, you know, there's been some amazing nights there. Some really great, great fun evenings.
Wonderful. Well, James, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for your time today, and best of luck with the new records and the club night, and really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Well, thanks you, and thanks for finding the time to talk to me on this otherwise very wet afternoon.
Oh, how good was that? What an absolutely delightful man. We carried on having a natter afterwards. Go and check out 4630. That's available now on all the usual places, Anchor and Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc. So go and have a listen to James's podcast. And yeah, go and check out the new music in the new year. And yeah, and thanks loads for listening and supporting. If you see us on the social media, we're on all the platforms, Off the Beaten Track. Give us a like, love, share, retweet, you know, anything like that. You know, even better, you could subscribe. If you subscribe to the podcast, that really helps. Leave us a review. And yeah, why not go and check out the Patreon? And you'll have access to another few hundred shows over there from as little as 80p a week. And yeah, I think I'm done. Thanks once more to James. Thanks to you lovely people for listening and supporting this podcast. And I'll see you next time. Bye-bye. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing. www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year. And they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fairwear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk. Official sponsors of Off the Beaten Track podcast.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.